Statewide satellite distribution of this program is made possible by the Lawrence Group, providing residents throughout New York State with total insurance coverage.
This program is a production of WAMC News. From Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly half-hour review of New York State government and politics. Your host is political scientist and syndicated columnist Dr. Alan Chartock of the State University.
Hello and welcome to the Legislative Gazette. This week we'll look at the fight between the New York State Senate and Governor Cuomo over the hospital reimbursement bill and the chances for a Senate override. The latest study on the Hudson River reveals a sleeping giant. The environmental impact of certain toxic chemicals on the river was unknown until late, and now there's a flurry of concern. In a related water issue, we'll look at how the tax department is catching yacht owners who evade New York State sales taxes, and the final destination of the infamous floating garbage. Who ended up getting it and what happened to the waste? Finally, we'll talk about the significance of Governor Cuomo's trip to Russia. It's all coming up on the Legislative Gazette. Senator Tarky Lombardi, chairman of the Health Committee in the Senate. Senator, good to have you on the show again.
Nice to be with you.
Okay, let me ask you this. You needed to have what is called a case payment bill this year, but why? Why did we need it in New York State? What were the stakes?
Well, what happened really is that it wasn't that we needed a case payment bill, but the present law dealing with hospital reimbursement sunsets at the end of this year. If we did not pass a new legislation, then by the sunsetting of the current law, we revert to the 1978 statutes, which really were the statutes that got us in all the trouble with distressed hospitals and the cost shifting and the problems in terms of hospital financing that existed when we had all the problems in the early 70s.
Now, make no mistake about this. This is big stakes here. We're talking about hospitals either surviving or closing down based on what the state of New York can do for them.
Absolutely. I mean, that you're talking about the financial cash flow of each and every hospital based upon their ability to have reasonable rates.
Okay, and the state has for a long time been in the regulating business. Now, what is in the new bill that the legislature passed that the governor doesn't like?
Well, the new bill has basically three major ingredients. There's more to it, of course, but let me summarize by talking just about three pieces. First is that it changes the reimbursement based upon cost factors that existed with a base year of 1985 rather than under the current law, which is based upon 1981 cost factors. Now, that certainly is going to add more money to the hospital pool if we make that change. And, of course, the state's opposed to giving additional funding to hospitals if it's not necessary.
And now, just very quickly, the governor and Commissioner Axelrod disagree with that. They say that starting in 1981, everybody was put on notice that they had to spend less money. Some hospitals lived with that and spent less money. Some spent more. But you say nuts to that.
Well, no, I don't say nuts to that, but I say that hospitals could not have done anything in this state in terms of new procedures or new staffing patterns without getting the health department approval.
And the way that's done is something called certificate of need, right?
Right. We have certificate of need process, which means that if a hospital wants to bring in a CAT scan, or if they want to bring in a new unit or build more beds, they can't get the approval without first getting the certificate of need that's based upon the health department and the state's analysis of their need.
Okay. Base year number one. Number two, something called negotiated rates. What's that?
Well, the negotiated rates, some states, the state of California example, where they've had a tremendous surplus of beds and a vacancy of beds, they've gone to what they call a competitive system or negotiated rates, saying that let people bid with the hospitals for their business, or let the hospitals bid for the business of the payers of service.
So if I'm the state of New York, I come in and I say to the hospitals, okay, I can give you my business or not, bid on New York State's business,
right?
That's right.
California started it, New York wants to follow, and what it would mean is that New York is a big buyer of services under the Medicaid program. New York would then go to all the hospitals and say, in this city, if you want the Medicaid business, give us your lowest possible cost.
So
that sounds good because right. It sounds good because it'll save the state money. But from a hospital point of view, it's not good. Hospitals will underbid for the services. They will be bidding at cost. They'll have to then transfer that cost to other users of the hospital services. So the poor customer, the poor patient, who is not part of the large buying group, which is most the middle class America today, will pay more for the same hospital service that the state is paying less
Okay, so
for.
The third thing then, so you're against negotiated rates, you're for the 1985 versus the 1981 as the base year which we base our reimbursements on, and the third thing is something called pricing, right?
Right. The pricing system, right now we reimburse hospitals based upon their cost. What they do is they compute their cost based upon their level of service, and that's how they determine their reimbursement rate. What the commissioner has said and what the Healthcare Financing Council has said, we can convert to a pricing system whereby you price for the services provided.
Give us an example. Gallbladder?
Well, let's say that we have a gallbladder. Mm-hmm. And if you're in one of any one of four different hospitals, the price for the gallbladder operation in each hospital today is based upon the cost of those hospitals.
Right.
And the cost of a teaching hospital, it will be much higher than the cost of a community hospital. But what we're saying under a pricing program is that we should group hospitals into classifications and try to get a unified price for the service regardless of what facility you attend.
Okay, now the governor seems, and the health commissioners came up with a much more expensive price for this than you did. They said $400 million, your experts tell you $100 million or less, depending on who you're believing. Now, the question I would have of you is, are you prepared to come back here and override the governor's veto on your bill?
Well, let me say that if nothing happens, I think we would have to come back and attempt an override because we cannot afford, the hospital industry and the people of the state of New York cannot afford to have legislation sunset so that we revert to the 1978 law.
Okay, now, Taki, the governor says, however, that he understands the legislature's concern, thinks there should be a law, says he wants to come back and negotiate it with you. Are you going to give him a chance to do that?
Well, he's the governor, of course, and if he wants to sit down and negotiate, we'll be glad to discuss and negotiate with him. The bill that passed is a bill that we passed after negotiations with the governors, but they would not in any way agree to the to what we felt was necessary, and we were not arbitrary. Ours was a consensus bill of the industry and the people involved. If we now go back to the table, which we'll, if the governor invites us to negotiate, we'll be glad to do that.
In a word, optimistic or pessimistic?
Unknown.
Senator Taki Lombardi. A new study about the Hudson River found that PCB contamination in the river is becoming stable, but other toxic chemicals are replacing them. The problem now is rainwater runoff from farm pesticides in city streets. This runoff is carrying chemicals such as lead and mercury into the Hudson River, bringing the pollution problem to serious proportions. The Legislative Gazette's Brenda McMahon has this report.
PCBs and other industrial pollutants are not the only toxic chemicals contaminating the Hudson River. This, according to a report released this week by the New York City-based environmental group Inform. The report was performed by a private environmental group over the past 3.5 years. It found that contaminated rainwater runoff from cities and farms are the primary incoming contaminants in the Hudson River. Since 1982, almost 700 times as much pollution in the Hudson has been caused by this runoff than caused by industrial and sewage treatment plants. Inform pointed out four areas which have the most contamination along the Hudson from Troy to New York City, and three of those locations are in the Capital District. These areas include the Mohawk River between Schoharie Creek and the Hudson between Waterford and Fort Edward, and the Hudson between Albany and New Hamburg, just south of Poughkeepsie. The fourth most contaminated area was found between Yonkers and New York City. Nancy Lilienthal, co-author of the report, says large collections of lead, mercury, and cadmium is caused primarily by the urban area runoff, whereas the PCB contamination, which is still severe, was caused by the General Electric plants along the river. Although Lilienthal says Inform chose not to make recommendations to the state, they did offer one suggestion which would help monitor water contamination.
We found it was very difficult to establish trends as to whether pollution by hazardous chemicals in the Hudson is getting better or worse over time. And one of the things that they could do is establish certain sampling locations that they use consistently year after year, so that we have a record for any particular location as to whether the concentrations of the various chemicals are increasing or decreasing over time.
But another problem with monitoring water, says Lilienthal, is that New York water standards are much lower than federal standards, and it's difficult to interpret the test results. Although Inform says the amount of rainwater runoff contaminating the Hudson is surprising, R.W. Groneman, spokesman for NCON, says they have been aware of this problem, and they're working steadily towards addressing both the PCB industrial pollutants and the rainwater runoff.
NCON has always been concerned about the amount of pollutants that are permitted to go into the Hudson River, and our Speedies permit, which regulates those kinds of water discharges, have been monitored quite closely over a number of years. We have built up a statistical table that indicates that the Hudson River was in fact improving dramatically in the cleanliness of the water source. PCBs remain a problem. We are trying to address that issue in our hearings in the upper Hudson area regarding the proposed dredging of PCBs. But as to chemical pollutants, we believe we have a good handle on that. We believe that more can be done, of course. In fact, DEC has often and always encouraged industries to reduce their waste stream. It helps the environment, and also it's often cost-effective in the operation of an industry that right now might be discharging some of its waste materials into the river.
R.W. Groneman. In a related issue, a bill signed into law by Governor Cuomo last week makes the Hudson River eligible for federal cleanup funds. The bill designated the Hudson as an estuary under a federal Clean Water Act. This act selects 11 estuaries nationwide to share the $12 million proposed for the program. Previously, New York Harbor was the only New York State body of water eligible for such federal funds. For the Legislative Gazette, this is Brenda McMahon.
The New York State Tax Department has endeavored upon their own sort of vice team. Tax inspectors are trying to catch yacht owners who have evaded paying sales tax on their luxury boats. Many yacht owners do this by setting up a corporation in Delaware for a $300 fee. The boat owners then maintain that this corporation owns the yacht, so they don't pay New York State sales tax. Carl Felsen, spokesman for the State Taxation Department, says the state has collected $10 million in yacht sales taxes in the past 4 years, but this week launched a major operation to collect much more. Inspectors swept through marinas on Long Island in June, and this week began tracking down yachts on the Hudson River, Lake George, and Sacandaga Lake, as well as the St. Lawrence Seaway, the Finger Lakes, and other New York waterways. Felsen told the Legislative Gazette's Bruce Robertson that one of the novel aspects of this week's tax operation is that inspectors are taking to the water to find the tax evaders.
We've always gone on foot into the marinas and yacht clubs because they're, you know, publicly accessible. This year, we also got the cooperation, first of the Nassau and Suffolk County Police Marine Divisions, and now in this latest sweep with the state police, the federal Park Marine Police, the Coast Guard, and various county sheriffs to provide us with launches so that we could go from the water side. This way we could go to private moorings and private docks, and we're finding that some of the most expensive yachts obviously are not in the yacht clubs or marinas, but they are at private moorings. So now we can do a much more comprehensive sweep. And the third thing we're doing different, what we've done in the past is we've gone in and tried to prove that the corporation that's set up in Delaware is just a shell. And we get marina records and try to prove that it's a New York resident that's paying the bills and this sort of thing. We've been very successful in doing that, but it's an awful lot of work. So what we're doing now is trying a different tactic and saying, well, if you want to pretend you're a corporation, fine. We'll treat you as a corporation. That means, number one, we assess corporate taxes. It means, number two, that the period that you have the use of the boat, you have to report that as income, the same as if you had a company car. And we're going to charge you state income tax on that, and then we're going to buck the information up to the IRS, and they'll charge a federal income tax on that. In addition, the corporation is responsible for paying sales tax for the on the fair rental value of the boat for the period they give it to an employee or a corporate officer for their use. So we're giving everybody a choice. You can dissolve your phony corporation and pay the sales tax, or we're going to hit you with this battery of corporate income and sales taxes. And those taxes won't be just charged once. They'll be charged every year. So we're expecting a lot of people to get out of the corporate yacht-owning business.
I would sort of imagine. Do they are they going to be liable for any kind of penalties if they opt right now to dissolve the corporation and pay the back taxes? Are they also going to be penalized for having, in a sense, done something illegal?
Well, it's not technically it's not illegal. If they set up their corporation correctly and, you know, they do have the corporation, you know, registered and current, there's nothing illegal. The thing is there is a corporate liability there, and if we assess the corporate liabilities, we will be charging interest and penalty. But what we're saying is, look, let's put this scam to rest. If you come forward on your own, dissolve the corporation, and just pay the sales tax, you know, we'll go as easy as possible, and let's just cut out all of this nonsense and, you know, not have us being, you know, naval detectives every year.
The sweep that is beginning in the downstate region in Long Island and New York Harbor, you indicated it's moving upstate. Is this going to be a step-by-step procedure, or is it going to be a simultaneous blitz?
No, it's all out right now since Monday. We kept it a little bit under wraps the first few days so that people wouldn't be moving boats around. But, for example, we have our Albany, Buffalo, Binghamton, Rochester, Syracuse, and Utica offices all involved in that. In a matter of fact, Monday alone, we reviewed over 12,000 boats and statewide, and we found nearly 900 of them to be registered out of state. And we're going to follow up on that. And so we, for example, out of the Albany office, they did check 13 marinas on Monday. They're checking more today. And this is going to go on most of the rest of the week.
After this week, Felsen says that inspectors will continue to follow up on tips from citizens calling a tax evasion hotline. Officials say boat owners sometimes call in to report yacht owners in their marinas who are thought to be evading sales tax. The infamous Islip garbage barge has finally come to rest this week at a Brooklyn incinerator after a five-month odyssey that took it thousands of miles in search of a dump site. Maury Small has this report.
The gar barge, as it came to be known, docked Monday in Brooklyn, where the more than 3,000 tons of New York trash was to be unloaded and burned. The ash is then to be trucked to Islip, Long Island, and dumped. The docking in Brooklyn was the first time the orange Mobro 4000 barge landed since it left New York City last March as part of a venture by an Alabama businessman hoping to barge trash for profit. But North Carolina officials refused to allow unloading of the trash bales at the planned destination there. The barge then tried and failed to unload in Louisiana, Florida, Mexico, Belize, and the Bahamas. And after the gar barge returned to New York Harbor, it became the subject of legal wrangling because nobody in New York wanted the trash either. Finally, 2 weeks ago, a Brooklyn judge approved the plan to burn the refuse in Brooklyn and dump it in Islip. That proposal had been challenged in court by Brooklyn officials and environmental groups. The barge provided material for jokes by Johnny Carson and cartoons in the New Yorker, but it also served to dramatize the worsening problem of waste disposal that communities nationwide are grappling with. The barge may also have sparked an investigation into the role of organized crime in waste disposal. New York officials are said to be investigating reports that a number of mob-linked businessmen were running the garbage. Assemblyman Maurice Hinchy of Ulster County, who heads a waste disposal committee in the assembly, says he passed on information on the alleged mob connection to the New York Organized Crime Task Force. Hinchy says it's high time for a clampdown on mob control of garbage carting, especially because inadequate waste disposal can have disastrous environmental results. For the Legislative Gazette, this is Maury Small.
Fred Dicker of the New York Post, the governor, is about to take a long predicted trip to the Soviet Union. What does he want to accomplish there? What's this all about?
Alan, I don't think there's any doubt that notwithstanding the governor's protestations to the contrary, this is about presidential and national politics. The governor, more and more over the last year, as we both know, has been interested in national issues. He's, of course, being touted just as recently, I think, as today by Mike Royko, as the number one candidate for the Democrats to field if they want to win the presidency. And what he's doing here is trying to address the really principal criticism against him on that issue, which is he has no foreign policy experience at all. This guy, I don't think, has ever traveled out of the United States except once in his whole life. Now he's going to Russia. He's going to be meeting with some important officials. He just gave a speech last weekend saying, let's do what we can to end the Cold War. He's having fun, and he's focusing on national issues.
Fred, over and over, we keep talking about how drafts are not possible in this environment, political environment. You've got to go into campaigns, the rest of it. Now, you're close to all the Cuomo people. You're on the phones always, as we say, working the phones all the time.
Right.
Your good friend Tony Burgos and you just went down to Nicaragua. He's one of the governor's closest advisors. What are they telling you? Is there any sense of what of an emerging strategy here?
No, no sense of a strategy, but what they're saying is that a draft is possible. That a draft is only impossible because it hasn't happened before, that if it does happen, then people will say, of course, it's possible. Let me note that legally, the delegates who go to the convention are not apparently bound to vote for whoever they're committed to. But even putting that aside, many now believe, Alan, and we've talked about this together, that at the convention there will be no clear winner. And after the first ballot, clearly all bets are off, and delegates can go wherever they want, no matter what the individual state laws say. So privately, they're saying it's possible. You know, I'm really hoping that AMC allows you to go to Russia with a press corps that's going, Alan, because this is going to be an important trip to see how the Russians treat the governor. And I think all your listeners out there are going to be interested in this because I think they're going to treat him like royalty, as a guy who could be the next president.
There's always been a sense in the Soviet Union that they think they get these handicaps on people that they think are comers. For example, for years, Richard Nixon has always been treated very well in China and the Soviet Union on the idea that somehow they still perceive him as a power here.
No question.
And it's just thinking that the same thing may well be true with Cuomo.
Well, let me just put it this way. Back in the spring when he was planning to go, he said he was only going at the invitation of some Sunya or Sunni professor who was teaching a course.
He said that on the Capital Connection on show.
I think he revealed it there.
Yeah.
But that's not the case anymore. Mm-hmm. In fact, this time Cuomo is going at the invitation of a gentleman by the name of V.I., and it's not Lenin, it's V.I. Voronikov, who just happens to be a member of the Politburo and is the equivalent of a governor of the major state, the Russian Soviet Federated Socialist Republic.
Yeah, he said that to us.
So, I mean, it's taken on,
Okay, what about the Duke? Here we have Dukakis coming out front now, leading in New Hampshire, leading in Iowa. What happens with a guy like that? After all, he's articulate, he's bright, Fred.
Yeah, but he's not distinguished. I mean, he is locally, they know about him in Massachusetts, but he doesn't have an excitement, Alan. He doesn't have, certainly, a genuine charisma the way this guy Cuomo does. And he doesn't have a cheering section. I mean, like it or not, or, you know, wanting to face it or not, The governor of New York has a cheering section from the New York Press, the New York Times in particular, the national TV networks, and the Washington Post, which likes him. And when you have the big-time media on your side, it's a lot different than when you don't. And Cuomo, as you know, is a favorite not only of some distinguished national sort of centrist and liberal or sort of lefty writers, but even a favorite of conservative writers like William F. Buckley. I mean, it's David Broder, it's William Buckley, it's Mary McGrory. They all are fascinated. George Will, they're fascinated with Cuomo in a way that Dukakis has been unable to have them fascinated in him.
He's a continual fountain of material and ideas, of course, which is a columnist's dream, and I'm sure he knows that.
Look, this guy Cuomo announces that he's going to do some running and it becomes national news. I mean, the guy is the hottest property around, and certainly the Soviets realize this, and I think we're going to see the treatment that they give him reflecting it.
Meanwhile, Fred, as they say, back at the ranch,
right,
there's still talk of an override. Tarky Lombardi, the distinguished head of the Senate Health Committee, is talking about a push towards overriding the governor on hospital reimbursement.
Sure.
Do they have the stomach for it?
Who said that Lombardi is distinguished, by the way? I know you just said it, but does anybody else agree with you?
Well, he's a very bright man. There's no question about it, Fred.
Well, I think there is some question myself, but
I
just wanted to raise that. But no, getting to your point, Alan.
I would debate that with you.
These guys don't dare, in my judgment, come back and override such a popular governor at a time when they look like a pack of thieves, and most importantly, at a time when the issue, this medical reimbursement issue, involves, according to the governor, $400 million in spending more than the state can afford. Why would they all want to put their necks out and override the governor and run the risk of being blamed as a group for nearly bankrupting the state? I say it won't happen. They're blustering. They're mad at the governor because they think he's made them look bad on the scandal stuff, when in fact they've only made themselves look bad, and to override the governor would make them look even worse.
Fred Dicker of the New York Post.
And that's it for this week's edition of the Legislative Gazette. Our show is edited and produced by Brenda McMahon in the studios of WAMC. She had help from Maury Small and Bruce Robertson. I hope you enjoyed our show. We'll be back again next week.
The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC News. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. This program is made possible with funds provided by the State University College at New Paltz.
Statewide satellite distribution of this program was made possible by the Lawrence Group, providing residents throughout New York State with total insurance coverage.